far as, in addition to the NEPA process, how could we have this dialogue as far as getting input? And that is something that we will take back and figure out how we could continue, whether it's through these forums or any additional forums that we could continue the dialogue in terms of, you know, as we go through this evaluation process, so that we could certainly hear your concerns and how we can address them as part of the decision-making process of the department.
Well, just for your information, I'm going to put this in the scoping comments from the NEPA document, that we want some place to have a discussion and a guarantees is not the right word, but guarantees to the state, and I don't know what the state's going to need, that this is actually going to happen the way you've laid it out now and the way ultimately it will be laid out. So I'm going to put those in my scoping comments. I would appreciate it if they don't come back saying out of scope, that somehow you figure out how we can address that.
Thank you.
Just to follow up on that, that's, I think, a very good path forward. You also may consider writing a separate letter outside the NEPA process just to reinsure that it doesn't come back. Well, the funding issue is outside NEPA, therefore. So, again, I don't want to direct you what to do.
No, but I appreciate any hints you can give me.
A letter, you know, you to the governor and the governor, maybe the secretary, to help reinforce your position
concerns, yeah,
would also probably be beneficial.
Okay, that's good.
Yep.
Yep.
Thank you. Just quickly, when we talk about bringing in this highly enriched uranium and using the chemical processes, turning it into LEU that can be then sold to a vendor, the byproducts in which we create, which then becomes nuclear waste, that would then be stored at the site, awaiting a repository, or is there some pathway of disposition for that material currently?
Sort of some of the byproducts, for example, some of the fission products that would be separated would go into the high-level waste system and vitrified, and they would be stored along with the other glass logs. And right now, and this is an estimate. We need to kind of refine our estimates. On one option, it may generate an additional dozen or so high-level waste canisters that would be generated if we were to follow the disposition path of converting it to LEU. One of the alternatives is if this was all going to be converted into glass logs, that could be as many as 200. I mean, that's something that's a rough estimate at this point that would be stored. And then there's also the salt solution that would be disposed of as similar to the salt stone balls that would be disposed at the site.
What about the cask that is stored in now? What happens to them?
The cask right now, if they're empty, they could be cleaned up and they could be, I mean, well, one of the things is being considered. One, they could just be disposed of off-site as low-level waste, or I don't know if there's other means for us to fill up the cask with other, say, grouted waste that we, you know, at least make some use of them, but ultimately they will be disposed of as well, as there would be no need for them.
One other question. With the shipment of this product, if, let's assume we decided to move forward with this, would the shipment come in all at one time, or would it come in as you process?
That is to be determined. Certainly the Germans have conveyed that, you know, especially with the inventory Jülich, that you know, they would prefer to ship it as soon as possible. So there could be a period of time that we would store it before we would disposition that. But one of the things we're very mindful is that we have, as Pat alluded to, is that there are ongoing activities at the canyon. And so part of the consideration is that we want to be able to process this material as quickly as possible. But that's something that we have to determine.
But if we accepted shipments of it only as it was processed, then we wouldn't be sitting in the position that we're currently in with products sitting there at SRS with nothing being done. I'm just wondering why we don't have something like that in place to prevent us accepting a huge shipment and then it in turn just sitting there as well.
Waiting with it.
That is an option we could look at because the German government, I mean, as I said, they have conveyed, I mean, it's their schedule, it's their urgency to the inventory. We'll look at that scenario and as well as a just-in-time shipment.
Thank you.
I want to do a process check for just one second. This is, we obviously have a lot of concerns that I don't think the DOE has thought through to be able to give us the answers, the certainty of the answers that we need. We have four more presentations. I don't want to hold them up. It's going to be a little bit beyond four now. Would it be okay if we table this discussion until either after we get the rest of the presentations done, or have Mr. DeLeon come back, or Pat make a presentation later this year, something when the answers are more firm? Would that work with council?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much for this presentation. You can see that we have some concerns and issues that y'all need to go help us resolve. So I appreciate very much your time, and if you can stick around until flight time, maybe we'll talk some more. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you as well, and I appreciate the opportunity to have this dialogue. And I'll just say that we do share similar concerns. And as you know, we are in the process of we wanted to communicate to you, you know, where we're at this point. We don't have all the answers yet. We're attempting to get the answers.
Well, I just want to say, sometimes DOE is damned if you do and damned if you don't. You either tell us too soon or too late. So I would prefer that you tell us too soon and we have these kinds of discussions. Thank y'all very much.
Thank you.
Oh, Gene, thank you. All right. Gene Ridley is going to introduce the four speakers we have essentially on the liquid waste program. And I guess Stuart's going to talk too.
Well, I'll just go up here and fill a seat for a minute.
And thank you all for being patient.
Hi, as Karen said, I'm Jean Ridley with the Department of Energy. I work in the Waste Disposition Programs Division. Basically, I have responsibility for the liquid waste program and the solid waste program at the site. And with me is Stuart McVean. He is the current vice president, soon to be president of Savannah River Remediation. Just quickly, I'm going to just give a quick overview of the adversities we faced in the last 6 months since we came to the GNAP Council. As Shelley alluded to, we've had reduced budgets, which required a workforce restructuring with SRR, resulted in about 465 layoffs at the beginning of, or prior to the beginning of fiscal year 14. When we got into FY14, as most people know, we had a lapse of appropriation. That also had an impact at the site. It caused cessation of work and a furlough of two weeks worth of time for SRR employees. On top of that, early in January, we had severe weather impacts. There was extreme cold weather, which resulted in a loss of steam from our steam supplier that impacted our facilities. We then had the big ice storm and a snowstorm, all of which required people not to come to the site. So with that, even though we've had those weather impacts, and we had the earthquake on top of that. So we were hit pretty good. But with that, we were able to still accomplish quite a bit in the first 6 months of the fiscal year, and I'll let Stuart talk to that.
Yeah, it's been quite a challenge, but we've really rebounded. The team's done a great job. This team's been down there for a long time, even though the contract for SRR has just been in place since 2009. And every time they come up against some piece of adversity, some wall to get over, they manage to find a way to do it. And so here's some highlights. I've kind of gone at a very high programmatic level, because the guy's going to get into a lot more detail. So I've got four guys here who really make up a strong element of the team, and I think they'll be excited about getting up here. Safety is just the ticket to get in the gate. I mean, you just don't have a choice. And so we've had, quite frankly, our best 12-month year of safety ever, which is remarkable in the face of the adversity over the last year. But on top of that, we've also done a great job at continuing the program. Got two more tanks closed this year, continuing to pour canisters at DWPF, and making good progress, not at the pace we were a year ago, but we are continuing to make good progress. And of course, you all know that we started on the first of its kind mega vault for salt disposal, and we're a good long way to having it ready to start coming up out of the ground. In fact, in the next month, we're going to start seeing walls come up out of the ground. So if you ever want to see quite a site, come on out to that construction site. It's a monstrous concrete pour that we've got ready to get going there. We continue to run saltstone at a pace that's incredible. We had, you know that a few years ago we had a lot of difficulty with that plant. Did a lot of work to make it more reliable, and now when we want it to run, it runs, and it does a great job of continuing to produce salt for us into disposal facilities. And then Neil's going to talk a little bit about the work that we've had going on in the MCU system. We continue to make good progress at treating salt and getting it disposed of. The system just came back up and is running here this week after about a three-month outage, and we're going to get into a little more detail on that. So I'm going to turn over to these guys to go through their presentations, and I'll be here if I need to jump up and answer any questions. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Steve.
Oh, lowrider. My name is Steve Wilkerson, and I am the Defense Waste Processing Facility and Saltstone Project Director. Appreciate the opportunity to come in and talk to the council today and update you on a couple things. About a year ago, we were in the newspaper about the status of the Saltstone Facility, Vault 4, and the associated basin and some contamination controls that we were working through. We're actually scheduled.
Let me just interrupt you 1 minute.
Sure.
This looks like it's old news.
It is old news.
But it was scheduled to be presented last October during the furloughs, and so we've just now gotten around to being able to put it on the schedule. So I just want to make sure that they understood that we hadn't been not...
Well, I was going to actually give you credit for that, because we were actually on slate to come in October, and that's exactly what happened to us. So wanted to take the opportunity to give you a quick update on the current status as well as the actions that were taken to deal with that situation. Give you a little bit of an overview. The graphic on the left just gives you the red dot. That's where the Saltstone facility actually sits. The closest point to the site boundary is about 5 miles, so just kind of give you an idea of where that sits. The graphic on the bottom gives you an overview of the facility, where things actually sit. This is Vault 4 that we'll be talking about. This is the old Vault 1. This is the new Vaults 2 Alpha and 2 Bravo. This was an older photo. This is some new vaults that we were building for Saltstone Disposal Units 3 and 5. The one up on the top gives you a more current one. This one's fairly recent. Again, this is 2 Alpha and Bravo, which are almost full. These are 3 Alpha and Bravo and 5 Alpha and Bravo. And this is the mega vault that you heard Stuart mention there. One of the things that should jump out at you quickly is that the old vaults were all square. All the new vaults are round, and there's a reason for that as we get into this, and I'll talk a little bit more about it as we go through the presentation. Just to give you a little bit of background on the issue that we have to deal with here, these old vaults that we have, we get some cracks. They're very small cracks. One, that's an enlarged view that's up at the top, so don't think that that's something that you could, you know, fall into or something. These are very small cracks. But they do allow some rainwater to migrate inside of the cells if the rainwater builds up on the top of those. If you were to have a picture of the inside of the cell itself, when we pour the grout or the cement form on the inside, as it cures, it actually shrinks a small amount. So there's actually a small gap that gets created between the wall and the actual grout form itself. So if you get rainwater intrusion or any other water into it, it tends to build up on the side. It doesn't take a lot of water because it's a very narrow annulus to cause the level to get high. along the wall of the vault. And what we see is if we allow that level to get high inside of the vaults, that where you have situations where you have construction joints or micro cracks that typically happen with these types of vaults, you can get weepage that will go through there. If you look at the vaults, really the sources of water that get in there are really threefold. One is bleed water that comes from the natural curing process of the grout. We do get some there. We also do significant flushing of the equipment after we get done running, which puts water into the system, and then a small amount of rainwater intrusion that can get into those. Those will be important here in a minute because I've eliminated two of them and I'm going after the third one. That's really the whole key of bringing that up. These are the existing controls that we have on Vault 4. If you saw some of those, what we will call them damp spots, these are not big leaks. These are weeping spots that will come through. The grout is too viscous to flow through those. It won't come through. It will set up fairly quickly. So it's really those water sources. We've basically taken Vault 4 out of service. Vault 4 is no longer being used. So we no longer have any bleed water being generated from grout being poured into it, nor do we have any significant water from flushing. Now, some of the maintenance activities that we're performing is putting a little water in it, and I will talk about those in a minute. So our main source of water that gets in there now is a small amount of rainwater that can get in around cracks or small openings around penetrations in the top of the vault. So several things have happened. You have to get a little historical data here to recognize that before we put these controls in place, there was some contamination that was on the ground around the vault itself. And what would happen is if you got a lot of rainwater that just hit the top of the vault, ran out, it tended to try to spread that contamination out. It made it difficult to control. So what we've done is a series of events or a series of controls that we put in place. One is to keep the cracks sealed up. If we see any of those, we have a very routine inspection. We look for those. We also control the rainwater flow path with gutter systems. The idea here is not let it run down the side and splash out on the ground. We control the water flow, just like we would at your home. Try to put it where you want it as opposed to it going where it wants to go. One of the key activities that we have to do is we manage the water level in the vaults themselves. Keep the water level low, and our real target is to keep it in a range around 12 inches is our target. But these containment facilities that we built along the side of the wall go up to about 8 feet. And the idea there is if we keep the water level always below that level, any weepage that we do get will be inside of those containment facilities. And those containment facilities are designed to collect that leakage. And then we can go after that and disposition it so it's not getting to the environment. We've also put some sealing on along the bottom of the vaults. The Megamix and Zypex tend to help. The square vaults, the Vault 4 is really just a square vault that sits on a base plate. You know, it's not designed to be a watertight type of vessel when it was built. So part of that sealing was to seal anything from potentially leaking along the cold joint that you have on the bottom of the vault. Okay. So here's where we are today. We moved into trying to stabilize Vault 4. One, it's no longer in use. Key factor there. We went into an alternative selection to say, what else do we need to do to stabilize the vault itself? And the two key things that we were after was one, to maintain or eliminate the water infiltration into Vault 4, and to mitigate any worker environmental risk. And that'll be important on what we picked. The alternative that we picked was basically to go in and pour a minimum clean cap, in other words, a clean grout layer, on top of the existing radioactive grout layer to reduce the exposure level that we would see at the top of the vault, because we're going to go work on the vault roof now. So that's really to protect the exposure, minimize the exposure to our workers that are going to be up doing some significant work. And at the same time, we're going to go install an elastomeric roof covering on cells Delta, Echo, and Foxtrot, Juliet, Kilo, and Lima, or the South 6, if you go look at it. The reason we picked those six, the North 6, or the others are already coated with that type of coating. So we've already done that work on those cells. And we're going to continue the maintenance on the roof and the weather enclosures and continue to manage drain water levels. That's kind of where we were. This is an update on where those projects are. SRR and DOE both are committed to the plan. This project is fully funded and it's on schedule. We're planning on a schedule basis to clean cap and do the roof coating of three cells. Juliet, Kilo, and Lima in 14. what's happened there so far. We've got the material that's been determined. We've tested the low bleed grout mixture. The low bleed was just to get as little water as possible. You can also see by the picture in the middle, we opted to go in and use trucks to pour this grout into the cell. The reason we do that is they don't have to put all of the flush water into the line that we would have to do if we used our installed system. So we're trying to minimize every gallon of water that we put in that system. The procurement of material is done. The capping of Juliet and Kilo has begun in June 2014. I give you an update. Both of those are done. They're both capped, and we actually started putting the roofing material on Juliet this week. So that's moving along well. Capping and coating of the remaining cells, Delta Echo and Foxtrot, are planned to be done by early in February. We had to do a lot of the design work and legwork up front. That's why it took us a while this year to get all that in, and you'll see we finish up the others fairly quickly. Pretty much all of them will talk about the vault, and then we'll move into this, and then if you have any questions, we get done. The other issue that we ran into was we have a sedimentation basin that's associated with the Saltstone facility. It's designed to pick up rainwater from all of the Vault 1 and Vault 4 areas. If you kind of look at the way it follows, there's this blue line that you see are drainage trenches that go out to this basin. So all of the stormwater runoff, all of the rainwater goes via trench out to this basin. Basin number 4, which is this picture here, it only discharges if the level gets high enough to go over the spillway. This is pretty standard. You'll see some of those just riding around in town sometimes. They just have a spillway. Level gets high enough, then it overflows in it and relieves the water. Up until February of 2013, this basin has never discharged. It's designed to. It's just never gotten enough water in it at one time to actually discharge. This basin has been contaminated since the late 90s. We've continued to report that. We monitor it, but that was the first time that we actually got a release. When we did have that release, this is on the other side of that pipe. So it overflows and comes out of this pipe, okay, out into a drainage ditch. That drainage ditch then goes out to McQueen's Branch, which ends up going to Upper Three Rods Creek, which ultimately ends out in Savannah River. So we did get some low-level contamination out in the drainage ditch. All of those, we sample for radioactivity and all the metals and other things. All of those other samples were good. We do have some low-level contamination that we found. Okay. What we've put in place...
Could I ask contamination of what?
It's low-level contamination. It's on the ground. It's in the soil.
So of what? Technetium?
It's mainly cesium-137. It's the main constituent that we found. I don't have the exact... Yeah, but it's mostly cesium that we've seen deposited out there.
And strontium?
I can get the specifics for you. I don't know exactly what they have.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, primarily cesium.
Can I?
Yes, sir.
Before we move on, since we're... Will you go back to the picture? Is the contamination very close to that pipe?
Yeah, there...
Or is it closer to the river?
It's very... Most of it is here. As it moves down the line, though, there is some smaller amount. You see, we've put some sedimentation breaks in here. Those are a fancy name for hay bales that tends to keep any of the sediment from moving. We have sampled those. We've got no liquid samples with any contaminant or radioactivity in them. There is some soil samples, though, there that we did find early on that did have low levels of contaminants. But we are monitoring, that we are continuously monitoring McQueen's Branch, which is that creek, and we've had nothing picked up there.
Is McQueen's Branch solely on the site property?
I think the answer to that is yes, but I have to double check. Yeah, I think downstream of all of this, it's all on our property.
Is there any monitoring that goes on where McQueen's Branch goes into the Savannah River?
Yes. McQueen's Branch actually goes to Upper Three Runs Creek, and the Three
okay.
Runs Creek is also monitored before it
okay.
goes.
And is there contamination
no, sir.
Further down? Okay.
No, sir. All right. What we're doing as far as the basin goes, that sedimentation basin is being expanded to the 100-year storm event. The original design was for 25-year storm event. You may remember back in February of 2013, we got the most rain we'd ever had in that month since like 1960. It really was one of those things that it had rained so much, and then we got a big rain on top of it that caused it to go. That excavation began in June of this year. It's about 35% complete. You can see where they're actually out working to put out the new spillway. This will make it possible to build the adjacent piece. We have completed the removal of soil in what I will call the higher spots. This is really on the lower thing. This is not something that we're trying to clean up to meet closure types of deals. So we're staying consistent with what the order has and in our permit. And we continue to monitor at McQueen's Branch and at that outfall, and we've seen no increases at all. We won't say that we're done cleaning up any of the spots. We want to make sure we've got the spillway done to make sure those are we don't get any potential contaminants that get out there, so we can be able to follow up on. I think that's it. Unless you have some specific
questions. I do have a question on water cracks and freezing. Is there any possibility of freezing associated with water going into any of these cracks?
For the vaults?
Yeah, for the vaults, yeah.
We don't see any. The temperature stays fairly high with the concrete form, and we keep the water level very low inside of the containments. The containment walls are about a foot and a half, so we haven't seen any indication of any freezing.
What kind of temperatures are we talking about?
70 degrees-ish. You know, the maximum is up in the 90s when we pour into it, and they will cool over time.
Right, yeah, but what kind of minimum temperatures have you seen in the vaults?
I would be remiss to tell you what the minimums are without going and looking. I can get those for you.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, we monitor those temperatures.
Other questions? I have a question on the cap. I think ultimately we're going to put soil over these vaults. Is this cap,
the roof
cap that you've put on it, is that designed, how long is that designed to last, and how are you going to monitor that it's still intact?
The roof that we're putting on, it's fairly standard type of materials. It's about an 8 to 10 year life. You have to go back and do maintenance on them. The PA folks for the performance assessment are evaluating it. What we did want to pick was a material that would not impact that at all as they went through that. So they'll roll all of that up as part of that assessment. But what we did do is we wanted to put something there that was not going to create a problem for the assessment down the road. So it'll be factored in and make sure we get that. Now, the other thing I didn't want to leave you with the misconception either is, you know, the cap that we're putting on is just enough to reduce the exposure for our workers right now. We still have to go back during closure space and fill it all.
A real cap on.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Steve. See you. Oh, you want me to introduce?
This is Neil Davis.
On the floor.
We should probably get you a different chair. Since you
a chaise lounge would be good. Okay, so I'm Neil Davis. I'm the project director for Tank Farms and Effluent Treatment Facility, so I would be the counterpart to Steve Wilkerson. He's at one end of the pipe, and I'm at the other. I've been at the site for 34 years, and every year of that has been spent in the tank farm. And this is probably the high point of the 34 years that I'm going to talk to you about today. The bulk of the waste in the tank farms at this point is salt waste. We are the only site in the country that's treating salt waste, and we do that with an interim salt disposition process. It will eventually be replaced by the salt waste processing facility, but in the interim, we run interim salt. There's two facilities involved here, the actinide removal process, which treats the waste by adding a chemical, monosodium titanate. It absorbs strontium 90 and other actinides, and gets that waste separated out and sent to DWPF, and it gets incorporated into glass. The other waste stream coming out of ARP, what we call clarified salt solution that doesn't have strontium and actinides in it. That goes to modified caustic side solvent extraction. That facility purpose is to reduce the concentration of cesium.